system would be put in place. We're still waiting to hear a bit from the government. There's been an announcement that starting this month, we should be hearing a bit more about the details. But at a very high level, it's simply not feasible.
You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show every other week on Tuesdays between 6 and 7 p.m. To get involved with Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Yes, rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means.
Do you?
It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number. You weren't a man. You want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Virginia, and I'll be your host for today. Today we will be sharing audio from an episode of The Final Straw Radio, which broadcasts from Asheville, North Carolina. In this episode, Kazi Touré, a former political prisoner, talks about the Jericho Movement, an organization that supports political prisoners in the United States. Without further ado, here's that interview.
My name's Kazi Touré. I'm a former political prisoner. I was with what they call the Ohio 7. It was really 8, but we all didn't get busted in Ohio. I was charged with seditious conspiracy in the end, and I did about 10 years.
How long have you been out?
Been out since October 1st, 91.
I wonder if you'd give listeners a little history behind the National Jericho Movement, of which you're one of the representatives, like how it formed and the role that it plays in supporting movement prisoners.
Yeah, Jericho, I got out in 91, and I guess it was formed maybe the year before, in 90, I think, by Safia Bukhari and Herman Ferguson and Jaleel Muhtar King. The three of them formed it, brought it into fruition. I got out in 91, and Daruba Bin Wahad, he got out in 90. So I guess there was only a few of us out, former political prisoners at the time. And Safia asked me in 92 to form a chapter in Boston. So I joined then in 92 and formed a chapter in Boston. And then, you know, we continued to build as we went along, you know.
And can you talk about the kind of support work that Jericho does?
Yeah, we do everything from writing to political prisoners, helping out if they don't have defense committees. We help out in trying to, you know, get them a lawyer and get visits to them. Some of people don't have money to get their people out to see them. we help in whatever way we can to help the prisoners that's inside maintain their continued involvement, being involved with their family, friends in the community, and legal expenses and health expenses. We help with doctors, finding them doctors, and pretty much whatever they need. It's been building, you know, accordingly. So, you know, a need comes up and we don't have a medical department. So we go out and look for doctors and whatnot that's sympathetic to the cause or people that movement doctors. And we, you know, pull them together and see if we can't get them to help us. Same with lawyers. You know, it's really staying in touch with the prisoners and finding out, you know, because like when I was in, there wasn't any Jericho, you know, so people just heard about you or didn't hear about you, might write you a letter. But most of the time it was just family or who you knew before. Maybe they would write, you know, and keep in touch and whatnot. But it wasn't anything formal put together like it is now. And it's really good.
Yeah, it seems like with a lot of people also coming from working class backgrounds and with the way that repression like hit the movements, and the movements had a lot less capacity for supporting prisoners, that Jericho came probably at a time when like y'all getting out recognized this need and just started fulfilling it yourself. And you know.
Yeah, basically, man. You know, basically that's how it's been. And I mean, it's, I think, and continuing to build, it's just like the tribunal, you know, that was held a couple years ago. And now it's with the spirit of Mandela, with the People's Senate, you know. So it's a continuation. We're steadily building. Knock this shit down, you know.
I'm sure at the time, like, prisons were a bit different. My friend Rob, who's in Maine, was doing support for a lot of the MOVE folks and was talking about sending in boxes of, like, vegetables and stuff like that at the time to some of those facilities. You said that there wasn't really much of a support movement available when you got out. Can you talk about some of the, like, innovations that you see today, some of the things that Jericho does that you're especially proud of?
Oh, yeah. Plus, you know, like what Rob was talking about, different joints. They had, you know, like, when I was in a state joint, you could get boxes from your family at certain times of the year, you know, like around Christmas or No Thanksgiving Day, you know, like to a day of mourning. They would, you know, like let people get in boxes. That's if you had somebody to send some boxes in, you know, of canned goods or, you know, things that were already packaged. So that was in different places, you know, in different state joints. Like I could get into New York prison joints, but I couldn't go see federal prisoners when I got out. You know, I would visit, you know, Herman and Jaleel and, you know, some of them brothers and David, but I couldn't see Jan. I couldn't see, you know, Ray or some of the people, Matulu, that was in the federal joint, even, you know. But as far as the work afterwards, I think, you know, we do all of the stuff we do, I think now jumps on it, like whatever, you know, people are writing to the prisoners inside. And so they have, you know, people are trying lining up with almost every political prisoner that's inside and getting the information out what they need. So that's all of that is totally good and wasn't happening before. And pulling together committees for people that's in isolation or pulling together, you know, committees and doing work around people that need medical attention and whatnot. It's making phone calls to the prisons, you know, putting pressure on them to bring about some relief to the prisoners is, you know, all that work's going on now. Even, you know, like when Jericho, if we don't have the money, we'll raise money. So like if somebody's coming out, you know, almost every prisoner that's come out since I've been out have been given, you know, like $1,000 to start their reentry back in, you know, some more depending on how much we could raise. Yeah. We raised, you know, but Jericho would always give them at least $1,000. And then each, you know, we'd have a fundraiser for them, you know, afterwards. So they would get more. So they got me, because $1,000 ain't going to really go nowhere. You know, they got to buy some shoes and clothes, and I mean, glasses or whatever. You know, I know when I got out, I had to go to rehabilitation to get glasses, to get a pair of glasses. They didn't want to give them to me because it was like you have to be handicapped to get them. And I was like, well, I'm a black man in America. You can't get more handicapped, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So she gave them to me, you know, mm-hmm. and that was good. I, you know, but she wasn't gonna, you know, they weren't.
They're just being stingy about it.
Yeah, about everything, man.
Yeah,
you know, it's just the system, capitalist system. So, but I think we're getting good at this, as good as some of the other groups it was doing, and you know, they would match people up. If they had wealthy people, they'd match them up with somebody coming out and they could take care of them. You know, I mean, we haven't got to the point where we could get somebody a car or anything, you know, cell phone. Yeah. You know, but it's things they need, a computer, you know, we have gotten a few people a bike and, you know, later on, you know, so they can move around.
Yeah.
You know, it's just meeting the needs of the people, man.
Yeah. I wonder if you could talk a bit about who some of the prisoners are that Jericho supports and maybe some info about them, just to sort of get their names rolling around in people's ears.
I was writing people's names down that had passed since they had gotten out and just passed within a few weeks or a few months, you know.
Yeah.
But we said, like, you know, Marilyn and Chuck, Africa and Russell.
Yeah.
Maroon, Matulu, but we supported all of them, and we support Leonard, and we support, trying to think of Larry's co-defendant now, Bill Dunn. Mm-hmm. Bill, you know, because he's been held a long time. Yeah. Supported Eric King, who just was released. Mm-hmm. Support animal rights people, earth rights people, former Panthers and BLA, and you know, Ed, a lot of people just passed, man. Ed Poindexter just passed inside. You know, my co-defendants, I had two of them pass inside, Tommy Manning and Richard Williams. And, you know, there's people that's still locked up. I don't have the list in front of me, you know. I'm just
going
off the top of my head. So I'm just thinking about, you know, different people.
I was hoping to talk about folks who had passed, and you named a few folks who had passed within like a short period of time after being released, or like we've had a situation of a number of people dying before they're released, like Ed Poindexter, for instance.
Yeah. Merrill Africa.
Yeah.
Like them.
Yeah.
Inside is terrible, man. It's terrible.
And some of the people that are on the list of folks that you support have been in since the 70s, since the 80s. Some are much more recent, like you said, like Jessica Reznicek, and some folks I think are politicized prisoners as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was kind of hoping to talk to you because you're a former political prisoner and you're involved in Jericho. And I guess just we've had these like devastating losses over the last few years of movement elders that have still been held inside. And I feel like it's not ABC, it's not Jericho, it's not like any of these groups necessarily that's like not doing it, but a lot of these people's names aren't a part of the popular culture that we're in, and it seems like a sign that our movement is really at a low state right now, and that means that the state can afford to release our comrades that are incarcerated late in their life after they've like held them for ridiculous amounts of time, right?
I know, it's crazy, man. You know, 48 and 49 years and 38 years, you know, nobody was killed. And you see, it's just like with all those January 6th people,
yeah.
20, I mean, you know, people died there.
Yeah.
But they don't talk about it. If if it had been
cop died.
Yeah. And if it had been us, you know, they would have been like, oh no, these people are cop killers. These people, you know, killed, you know, two or three people. I don't know how many people died there, you know, because of that. And then they don't even talk about it. It was mentioned in the beginning, but then, you know, that would be all over front page news all the time if it was one of us. I mean, first of all, if people, we went to protest, they would have shot everybody on the steps, man, you know, and they had cops with the guns in their hand and backing off from them, you know.
Or slapping them on the back.
Yeah, if it had been us, it would have been like, man, people, there would have been a lot of people dead.
Yeah.
There would have been a lot of people dead. It's just, you know, hypocrisy of the system, you know. But what gets me, and you're right, you know, like, I mean, in 98, when Jericho had his first big demonstration, we had from Boston, we had like 13 buses went to
D.C.
Yeah. You know, it was a lot of people. We worked for like a year pulling that together. But now I don't think you could get one bus, you know. Yeah. It's really at a low.
Yeah.
And yeah, they do get away with a lot, man. If there was more people in the streets, you know, like, look at, you know, like a lot of people in the streets now, but they're in the streets because Israel's, you know, massacring the Palestinian people, and everybody can see it on TV and social media, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas a strong movement, we'd be in the streets, you know, stop like about the 75 years before this.
I mean, people, it's crazy. They don't a lot of times they won't respond until they see people being brutalized. It's like in the civil rights movement, you know, it took the shock of them seeing people peacefully marching down the street with dogs and people spitting on them and beating them with billy clubs and whatnot, and people weren't doing nothing but walking down the street, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was a shock to the consciousness of the world.
Or I mean, also every time, maybe not every time, but frequently when there's a large series of maybe nationwide protests around like Freddie Gray or around Oscar Grant or around George Floyd or around like a lot of these individuals being brutalized and killed by the police, it's because there's video and it finally breaks mm-hmm. through the humdrum of day-to-day white supremacy that we live through for enough people.
I know. It's a shame, man. People have to wait until it gets to that point. But you know, it's the same here. When it gets to that point where people like can't take any more, you know, and they just go out and unleash, you know, their fervor on the cops, on the citizens. They're gonna say, like Hamas did, you know, I mean, you can kick a dog but so long and it's gonna bite back, you know. Yeah. So, but it's a shame that we have to wait until that happens, because then, you know, people say, well, yeah, but look at what they did, you know. And I mean, it's look at what you made them do.
Yeah. Man.
You didn't care about what was happening to them. You care what was happening to them people until they said enough is enough, you know.
Yeah.
Now you want to care because they're acting out, you know. Well, I mean, why keep waiting for, keep taking it until, you know, until you got George Floyd or you got, you know,
mm-hmm.
people dead.
So I guess bringing it back to Jericho, like a lot of folks, not everyone, but a lot of folks that y'all support are people who were a part of movements or who individually took action to try to stop the brutalization and stop the murder. And stop the cruelty within the borders of the so-called USA. And I think like one of the reasons that we saw from Julio Montequin's defense, folks working for Mr. Montequin was to like through the Freedom of Information Act, they were able to get a hold of some of the denials for parole, which was some of the most racist, just gross stuff that was being promoted by people that claimed at least to be law enforcement or to be guards or former guards or what have you, and just espousing like gross white supremacist stuff. So it's like the, not only is it about the movement in the streets, but it's also about just how deeply interwoven into the systems of power that keep our elders in. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about some of your ideas about providing for folks that are getting out, about post-release, what things we're missing, what things movements are doing well. Like, I think you were talking about independent, I'm never going to be able to say this, Puerto Rican independence movement activists.
Yeah. Well, what the Puerto Ricans were doing, when I first got out, they had someone matched up, like they would have a wealthy person or a lawyer or someone who was doing well matched up with each prisoner that came out. And that way they would, you know, and they would, you know, trying to get them jobs and whatnot, because that's, you know, all those things are really important. And, you know, people getting out that's up in age, and then later, you know, you get pushed on to Social Security. Well, you ain't getting nothing if you didn't pay into it. And if you didn't have a job, then you're not going to get anything. So if you was locked up, you know, from the time you're 19, 18, 19 years old, you get out when you're, you know, in your 70s, you know, after 48, 49 years, 50 years, you know, like you're not going to have anything paid into it. And that's a big problem, you know. It's a big problem. And it falls back, a lot of it just falls back on the family, you know, if people have any family, you know, and a lot of times people like us that have, we are estranged from a lot of family, you know, because they're, you know, people are into the system, you know, why didn't you just go along, you know, you know, but, you know, and it's too bad, but, as far as what we could be doing is we can, you know, like make a lot of those things, but they're programs. Make, you know, like, okay, so we have a program for that. We have a program for, you know, helping people get speaking engagements or whatnot, you know, so they can get paid. That would be good. Whatever jobs could fit the person, you know, the person can do, you know, like that would be good, I think. And I think people, you know, that get in the position to hire, you know, and persons capable of doing the work, man, they should hire them. Because, you know, the state is like they, for instance, I went back to school in 92 and went to UMass and I graduated in 96. But that same year, they passed a law in Massachusetts that anyone that had a felony conviction can't work in any place that receives state or federal funding, and most every job, and you can't live in the place. So a lot of people, even like kids that just regular, you know, criminals, whatnot, they come out and their parents are living in the projects. They can't go back in there or their whole family gets kicked out. You know, it's like, they create laws to hurt people even more.
Yeah.
You know, stop. Then they want to say, well, you know, these people don't want to work. They're lazy. Mm-hmm. But they pass a law to say you can't work.
Yeah.
You know,
you had brought up the idea when we were chatting earlier about like one thing movement could be doing when folks are coming out is, like you said, matching up people with jobs that fit the kind of work that they can do. So maybe prisoner support organizations, if they know that someone's coming out, or even if they don't know that someone's coming out, just sort of like build relationships with people that own, you know, that run, I don't know, legal offices, or that run mechanic shops, or that run woodworking, or whatever sort of thing that would allow someone to have that when they step out of the prison doors and be able to actually support themselves. Because not only public housing, but I know in different places it's affected food stamps, it's affected student loans, it's affected all sorts of other.
I've been trying to, like, the last, I don't know, like 10 years or so, I've been trying to link up with people that got land, that have land, and try to establish places where people, I really want to build a, like a healing center, you know, where people can come out and go there and reacclimate slowly and not be thrust right back into, you know, this madness, you know, where they can go and sink their hands in the dirt and, you know, plant some food and just, you know, like that relationship with the earth, you know, is mm-hmm. therapeutic. Yeah. Is in good ways. So I've been trying to like work on things like that. And we have a few spots that we're trying to, you know, and one in Western Mass, and Ralph had a place upstate New York, about a mile from the Canadian border, but it's really cold. We got a couple of spots in Vermont, and another one upstate New York that we work with. Native American brother named Jason. He's used to be with the Green Gorillas. We used to go up there like every summer. So, and you know, do work there.
Yeah.
Help them out and camp out there. It's good for people, man, coming out, you know, to not be right back in the city.
Yeah.
Right back with all them sirens going off every day, you know, they can think a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that stuff's activating. You're signing, you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a really good idea. And especially if that gives the opportunity for folks with common experiences of incarceration to be able to just communicate with each other about what they're feeling, what they're thinking, what their experiences are, like what things they found to help, what have you.
Yeah, right, right. And having groups like that is good.
Yeah.
You know, I was working at American Friends Service Committee for a while, and we brought Native Americans down, or Native Canadians down, to show us how to run restorative justice circle, healing circles, you know, and they stayed down for a while, you know, for about a week with us, and we got to learn how to do those things, you know, and it was really good. But we have circles like that. That would be, you know, because, you know, it's traumatizing, man. Everybody has been really traumatized. And you don't get any kind of healing like that. Well, I was in California visiting my son, and this is back in like 94, and there was an earthquake out there. And it was one before, and then there was one when I was there. And they was on TV, on the news, talking about, you know, people, you have to, you know, your pets have been dislodged, and some of them have been in shelters for the last 2 weeks. And so there was like, when you go to pick up your cat or your dog or whatnot, and you bring them back into your house, let them reacclimate, you know, like just sit the food down and let them, you know, don't expect them to, because they've been traumatized, right? I mean, they was explaining this thing in detail on the news, and I was sitting there thinking, damn, man, I know people that's been locked up, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, you know, and they come back out, you just throw them back. You know, you don't talk to the people on the news, well, this person's just coming back in, you know, give them some space, don't like run up on them real quick, and don't like yell at them, because they might, you know, have PTSD from the guards beating on them, and they might react in a way that, you know, that they're just used to reacting. Yeah. They didn't do none of that. I was like, man, you know, I'd rather have animal rights.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and imagine if that was like a part of that was cool. Okay, we're going to give you a place to stay. We're going to give you some food. We're right. not going to expect you to immediately go out, hit the pavement, try to find a job or something like that. But like, we're just going to let you chill for a while, occasionally check in, ask if you're okay, if you need right. anything. Like,
right. Yeah. And you have some counseling or some other people that just got out, and where you could, you know, kick it with them, or some people who have been out a little while, you know, and, you know, where, you know, you could talk about the experiences you went through since you came out. Yeah, with nothing like that, man.
Yeah.
You know, but it's time somebody does something, you know, because they don't have, you know, that they just came out didn't have any money or didn't have any. That's the other thing. I mean, they just, you get nothing. If you didn't like work in industry or something like that while you were inside, you get about $75. Mm-hmm. Here's a check for $75. Man, good luck.
Yeah.
If somebody does something, go out and rob something or whatever, mm-hmm. and something happens, they want to say, oh, look at them, man.
They're never going to change.
Yeah. You know, when we're talking about, you know, the support that people might need.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like after people do a lot of time and get beat down a lot and get, you know, the tear gas, like, because when we were in, when I was in Walpole, every Friday night, the cops would come in and, you know, and fuck us up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They come in there sometimes in Ku Klux Klan uniforms and shit, yeah. and reading people's mail and saying shit and getting people riled up. And we rip out. We rip out and flush sheets down the toilets. And because the guards couldn't leave until they had to clean up their shift. You know what I mean? So we fuck up their Friday night.
Yeah.
So, okay, you know, you want to fuck with us, you know, then we'll fuck with you. And we flood out. But, you know, they shoot tear gas and everything in there and pepper gas and stuff and come in and beat people one cell at a time. And after you go through that for so many times and you're kept in isolation, you know, for like 2 or 3 years, man, I did 3 years in ISO, you know, like then you come back into the community. I think the people, you know, I kind of got into it a little bit, you know, they need to have some kind of thing set up to help people reacclimate, man.
Yeah. That's yeah. All. Was this during the prison strike in 1973 or before that? Cause you'd mentioned
I wasn't in then. My brother was in there then. I was outside working with, you know, I was outside the wall organizing people then, you know, Yeah, that's 73 when they took over the prison. Yeah, granted, took it over for 2 or 3 months. You know,
that's incredible. And the like administration or everyone, the media, everyone was saying they're going to tear each other apart. They're going to they can't do it, right?
That's why, because the guards left. The guards walked out because the prison administrator was given in to the prisoners' demands. It was like, yeah, you know, like we shouldn't be making women take out their tampons and squat over a mirror and disrespecting people like that, man. You know, like prisoners went off, man. When that shit started happening, you know, it was dogging people's visits, you know.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
I talked to Eric King after he got out, and he's in a halfway house now, and he was talking about giving people the support that they need, not just the support that we want to give, not just the stuff that makes us feel good, but like actually checking in with folks and seeing what they need. And that, like, coming out of isolation, he was talking about being in the Supermax ADX Florence and his experience there.
It's fucked up, man. You know, at joint two, the guards are all drinking bottled water and it's built on a toxic waste dump. They built that prison on a toxic waste dump, knowing, man. They knew it before they built it. And we used to talk about it, you know, and everything we were writing. They're building this prison just like the stuff's going on in Cop City, you know?
Yeah.
You know, people are out in front of it before it happens, but the so-called citizens just allow that shit to happen.
Or like that prison in Eastern Kentucky that is like a former open pit coal mine or mountaintop removal site that the state government's been trying to build a prison on
Where's that, man?
So Fight Toxic Prisons group out of Florida has been pushing against this for a while now, is trying to talk about the interrelation between ecological justice and incarceration and how those two are like so intertwined. And so they and other groups, lots of local activists around like Whitesburg in Kentucky have been trying to stop the building of this prison. And it stopped for a little bit, but it seemed like they've sort of ramped it back up. the yeah. attempt to push it through and get it funded.
We have to sustain the struggles, man, and build yep. them, you know? We really do.
A lot of the people that are on the Jericho list of supported prisoners are folks who are getting up in the years and have been in for a very long time. As you said, like 48, 49 years. Over the years, I've come across some projects like Release Aging People in Prison, RAP out of New York, that seem to be doing a really effective job of getting not only aging political prisoners, but aging prisoners out of the system before they get to such like dire times as Dr. Shakur, for instance. I wonder if you have experience with that project in New York, or if there are other sort of approaches that you think listeners would do well to learn about and sort of try to replicate.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know that much about that project. You know, I know, I think Sophia Elijah runs it. Is that the same? Yeah. And she was able to, you know, help some other former political prisoners, like Laura or Susan Rosenberg and some of them. I don't know how well, if they could duplicate it in Boston or duplicate it in other cities, Philadelphia, for instance, you know, because a lot of people are limited to the area where they come out,
yeah,
and where they live, you know, like, and I think like some of the move people, they wouldn't even let them go back to Philly, you know, when they got out, they had to go somewhere else. No, when I first got out, I couldn't come back to Boston. They wouldn't let me come back to Boston, you know. So I was down in there, Philly, and that was cool. I got to meet other people, you know, that I didn't know before. So then it's the same with being locked up. They move you around. You get to meet other people that you didn't know before, other political prisoners and stuff, you know. But as far as the programs, man, I think, you know, that's a good one. You know, any programs that can help people reacclimate back in and, I mean, actually help them.
Yeah.
You know, but it just gets harder, I think, with the political people.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to, like, let up, man. You know?
Mm-hmm.
They keep people in isolation longer. They keep people, you know, give people longer sentences, you know, and they mash down harder.
Do you think that there are any commonalities between long-term political prisoners in the U.S. that have gotten release dates that have gotten out, or ones that haven't, that have either died inside or like been killed by incarceration or died shortly after? Or do you think that it's more of a like case by case? It depends on who's on the defense committee and who the lawyers are and stuff like that.
No, I think it's mostly, I think it's a class thing too. I think those people that come from like working class backgrounds and whatnot that dare to rise up, dare to stand up and say no, and you know, are going to be subjected to the longer sentences. And you know, it's just like that, you know. But it doesn't matter too much who their lawyers are, you know, or the defense committee. But if things are done in a way where you can get a lot of publicity, mm-hmm. like you saying before, you know, if, when the spotlight's not there, and it's small, they do nothing. But whenever it gets bigger and a lot of people get knowledge of it, and you start getting phone calls and emails and faxes and whatnot, that's tying up your business, disrupting the flow, then you get more attention, you know?
Yeah, but then I guess there's like an example of like Mumi Abu-Jamal, whose case has gotten international attention at a higher level than any other political prisoner that I can think of, who's like, I can talk to folks in Europe and they're like, oh yeah, Mumia. Like,
yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, man. That mean, but then they got the fraternal order of pigs, man. Yeah. They organizing just as strong to keep them in, you know? And you know, it's ridiculous, man.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. They got the judge. And, you know, the original judge, Sable, mm-hmm. and whatnot, saying, you know, the clerk heard him say it, you know, yeah. I'm going to help you fight a nigga. How can you sit and be a judge on the case, and how can the courts not overturn it?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's class stuff, man. It's just like with Trump now,
yeah.
You know, he was supposed to be indicted for Mueller told me to my face when he charged me with sedition. I was like, how can you charge me with this? One person can't, you know, because it had been separated, you know, and it was like, well, if you write something or say something in a park,
mm-hmm.
and other people go out and do it, then you're in a conspiracy with them, even if you don't know them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what did he do? He just stood up there and said, go down there to the Capitol. And they went down to the Capitol, get them votes and get them ballots and whatnot. And and he doesn't get charged with it. You know, it's just class stuff, man. And they're not going to like, and they were, you know, if it's a constitutional law that says that, U.S. 3, 1970, 80 something, I forget which site it is, that says that anybody who doesn't recognize the official vote of the new president coming in, they have to vacate their seat. That's the constitutional law, man. Mm-hmm. All them senators and Congress people that didn't, you know, recognize Biden coming in.
They're not going to get tried on that.
but they were supposed to vacate their seat.
Yeah.
And nothing happens to them. The Democrats and the Republicans are the same. And they want us to vote for them, and we shouldn't. Simple as that. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I'm not going to say that we should rely too much on the legal system to stop torturing, incarcerating people in the ways that it has. But Darubo Bin Wahad had spoken on an episode of a Black Power Media show. I'm forgetting which of their shows it was, this last, I think in October, and had mentioned about decertifying police unions as an idea of like just knocking them down a notch in terms of their ability to be able to impact legal decisions, to impact legislation, to be able to like push through their own personal repressive agendas. Since we both recognize that, like in Jaleel Muntakim's situation as well as in Mumia's situation, it's these police unions and guard unions that are at the forefront, that are at the vanguard of movement prisoners inside for longer and longer. Back in the 90s, there was a lot of talk. Like, I remember a Rage Against the Machine song that starts off with Zach calling out the Fraternal Order of Police of Philly in the beginning of it. But why we're not talking about the cops when we're talking about these long-term prisoners, it's like those two things are separated, but it seems a prime example of like, we just got through the George Floyd rebellion.
Yeah.
Where do you think?
I know. People's attention span and you know, like they go on to, I mean, they got TikTok, they got their phones, man. They got all this stuff going on. There's the distraction and, you know, and they just, I don't know. They just can't stick with anything too long, man. It's really too bad because I agree with Daruba that, you know, we should use everything we can on every level and fight them. I mean, like, I asked Rafael Cancel Miranda once. I was like, Raf, you know, they tell me, you know, Kazi, you can't, you know, you have to pick and choose which issue you're going to fight around. You know, I said, so what do you think? You know, he says, you have to fight them all, man. You know, you have to fight them all. You know, it's no picking and choosing.
Yeah. Because they're all fighting you.
Yeah. Crazy. But there was something, too, I wanted to say about, you know, like we've been trying to get community control over the police for a long time, since way back in the 60s and 70s, man. That was one of the Panther Party things. And Daruba's been on it for a long time, you know. And, you know, we started to make some progress with it when we had all those back, when it was being exposed, all those back-to-back killings where people were getting shot in the back, mm-hmm. you know, and the white cops were saying, oh, we were just scared of them. They were running away from you, and you're scared of them, man. You know, come on, you know. You're just killing people, man. And the Rochester, we saw the Rochester police, you know, turn in all their badges and guns and quit, right? Because if they weren't going to be allowed to brutalize and kill black people, then they're just going to lay down and quit. They should have let them, man.
Yeah, I agree.
They should have let them. They should have said goodbye. Because that's not what this job is. You know, you're supposed to be a public servant, man. You know, repairing roads and building bridges and, you know, going in and making sure the elderly people are taken care of. They should be, you know, public servants, man.
I don't know if I trust them for any of that.
No, I know, but you could, they know how to build bridges. I mean, they know how to, like, some of them was in the Army and, you know, like, before they Marines and whatnot. They know how to, like, do other things, man. That's Geronimo learned how to do that. He built that over in Tanzania, you know. Mm-hmm. He built the whole sewer system in Tanzania.
The Prison Radio Show airs every other Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas of what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. You can call us collect from Bordeaux Prison and Rivière des Prairies Prison by calling 438-858-6116. Thank you to the folks at Fed Phone Line for gifting us this number. Again, the number is 438-858-6116. Feel free to call us from inside with news, song requests, and shoutouts. Pass the number along to family and friends on the outside, who are also welcome to call.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at www.ckut.ca. We are airing audio from the Final Straw Radio's recent interview with Kazi Touré, a former political prisoner and founding member of the Boston chapter of the prisoner support organization, the Jericho Movement.
I think that I also heard in that same interview Daruba Bin Wahad talking about how the early stages of the police oversight committees just what were, I mean, I could say this anyway, having worked around police accountability stuff over the years, but that it's a joke and that it's a counterinsurgency op, that the police are never going to give a community oversight. They're going to bring in activists into the fold that are interested in the subject and then bring them to the table. They're going to feed them pancake dinners like they did in the town where I was from, or pancake breakfast with the mayor, make them feel like they're like actually sitting with power and that their voice says anything, but they're not going to give them any sort of real, they're not going to give them the leash.
Decision-making powers to stop or to, you know,
fun, I know. For any.
Yeah. But I know, no money to do anything, no, nothing.
It's a distraction, yeah.
Yeah, they know how to do that, man.
Yeah.
They've been doing it for a long time, bro.
Yeah.
You know, they've been doing that, you know, and co-opting this and watering down that, and you get nothing. No change. I mean, for the last 400 years, it's been all the same, you know. You know, shoot. And that's really sad too, that people haven't been able to, or I don't know, I don't think people are stupid, man.
Yeah,
you know, I think they can see it, mm-hmm. and they understand it, but they're just afraid to lose whatever little bit of stuff they got. You know, they see what happens to us and what happens to other people. You know, they've been seeing that since the grammar school.
Yeah,
you know. Whoever like stood up and said something about what was happening in the school got beat down, and nobody, the other classmates just sat there, and they, you know, they wanted somebody to say something, but they weren't going to say it. That's, you know, And it's one of the things that I saw at this conference we was just at MIT was people were asked, you know, between nonprofits and revolution. And so how the people on the nonprofit side was saying it was like people are not ready for revolution. So, you know, we should continue to do the nonprofit stuff, you know, and educate the people. But I think, you know, if you're not ready, there are people that are ready. Support them. Set up something, ways that you can support them and moving it forward. And then maybe, you know, as things start building, maybe some of them people will be ready and they'll join. Mm-hmm. You know, if they see, you know, people starting to, you know, like set up, you know, they have places for people to go, that people can, that's got liberated zone here or a liberated zone there, you know, and they're working it, you know, and they're able to sustain it, that more people would come and join.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, you know, but that has to be, you know, because I mean, I know a lot of people that will go, want to go do some things, you know, take care of some business and whatnot, but have nothing to fall back on.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was thinking, man, those people should be willing to support that, man.
Yeah, I guess. And but like the downfall of when people try to build like autonomous infrastructure projects is so often it's about dropping out as opposed to being a feedback place, being a place maybe for where people can take a break if they need to and do some, you know, do some work, dig their hands in the ground or whatever. But
right.
Without a tie for like, OK, now like
then you're back in.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was one of the things we was trying to build program that I was working with, because we were working with youth. Back when I first got out, I was doing a lot of work with youth. And a lot of the stuff that we were doing during the day was getting undone at night because they were going right back to the same turf, you know, and getting back involved. So we was trying to train them, you know, not to be good workers for capitalism, but, you know, how to, you know, because they were getting educated too, political education at the same time. But they was getting undone at night. So we, a couple of the counselors and teachers that worked there were saying, okay, so we need a spot where we can take people out for like 10 months.
Yeah.
Out in the country somewhere where they, and we can train and teach them. And they can learn the same skills that they were getting there, like, because they were getting into the carpenters union, the electrical union, the masonry, and it was jobs, you know. Mm-hmm. And then we got them into the union, but also got them a GED.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, but it was getting undone, bro. So They needed to be, like, taken out somewhere and then brought back, you know, mm-hmm. and then take the next group out and brought back. And then you build them more and more cadre, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, now that we've laid out the recipe for a people's army,
well, you know, we gotta move, man. We gotta move, you know.
Well, Kazi, I was gonna ask now just how folks can get involved in Jericho and sort of how to get in touch and also how to support your work and also support the work that Jericho does, unless you wanted to talk about another topic in between now and then.
No, I think, you know, like I was in South Africa at the World Conference on Racism, NCAR, this one. It's funny. I just looked over and saw it, you know.
Yeah.
I can't even.
You get got a picture. Yeah. That's cool.
And I got a.
Oh, like a little name tag thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
cool.
And it's just on my light anyways. But when I was there, I came in like a day, a little bit late. And they were already having a discussion. They had like 9-10 things already written down, you know, like the 10-point program of the Black Panther Party. They already had 10 things, but not political prisoners weren't on there. And so I started arguing, you know, you got to have political prisoners. I mean, I was going to tell them, look, you have to have them first,
mm-hmm.
you know, because in any legitimate movement, got to, you know, you look around the world. And you see, you know, IRA, Sinn Féin, you know, Mkhonto we Sizwe and, you know, ANC and whatnot. They call for the release of their political prisoners first, man. Palestine.
Yeah.
You saw Hamas call for the release of the prisoners first before we even do anything else. You got to release those people that was fighting for us, man.
Yeah.
But we don't do that here. We didn't do that here. And they didn't have it on the list. So I brought it up to them and they put it on the list, but they didn't put it as first. But, you know, people, that has to be instilled in people here, man. You know, because if you don't, you're not going to get another one to come up.
Yep.
You know, people are going to say, man, look at those people. You let those people sit there for 48, 49 years, you know,
yep.
And nobody, you know, came for them, you know. And they're not going to be willing to step up, man.
Yep.
You know, it's just that. And so I would suggest that people, you know, get involved. And if there's not a Jericho chapter or there's not, you know,
like ABC or.
Yeah. And, you know, join something that's working around political prisoners. It doesn't have to be Jericho, but, you know, join something. Start a chapter if there's not one. Join one if there is one. You know, like, because we have to, and we don't have enough people to fulfill all the work that we have to do. You know, I mean, we should have three or four people in Boston on one committee and three or four on another one and three or four on another one so that we get, you know, everybody's not like one person mm-hmm. trying to hold down the whole thing, you know, but a lot of times that's the way it is, you know, and people get burnt out. We used to do an event every month, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then after a year or so, people was like, come on, Kazi, man. You know, like, can we not do that next year? You know, I'm like, I want to do more, you know.
But, well, you mean two a month? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I want to like hit, you know, or just expand it more because more people have to know who's locked up, who sacrificed what for the whole, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'll plug in the social media and the websites and everything at the end of this. I know that ABC has, or the ABC Federation at least has a war chest, like a one central place that you can throw money. Does Jericho have something like that too for the prisoners that they support?
Jericho Nationals, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
I believe it's through IFCO. You know, I wanted to say something too about Varanza, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's still locked up and he's gone and he doesn't get a lot of recognition about what on his case, you know. And,
yeah.
And he, you know, here's someone who finished their sentence and then it was still locked up because, you know, the just so-called Justice Department says that, you know, he hasn't changed.
Yeah.
You know, I never changed either. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, of course, they couldn't. I mean,
yeah, but they're saying he never changed because he said that he didn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And you know, it's like, this is the thing, man, that they try to say that you have free speech, but it's only as long as your speech is what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So yeah.
See it even.
Kazi, thank you so much for having this conversation and much appreciation, much respect.
Thank you, man. I hope I helped bring some people into doing the work, man.
Yeah.
I really do.
I think it will.
Somewhere, you know, whatever they can do, whatever is helpful.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Much respect.
All right. Take care, man. Yeah, stay on too. The move.
Free them all.
You are listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at www.ckut.ca. That was an interview with Kazi Touré talking about the Jericho Movement, a prisoner support organization in the U.S. You can find the entire episode on The Final Straw's website at thefinalstraw.libsyn.com. You can check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show. We are at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com and prisonradioshow.libsyn.com. The Libsyn address gets updated more recently. You can also follow us on Twitter. We are at Prison Radio Show. Parts of our show are also available through podcasting apps. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Tuesday, January 30th at 6 p.m. If you have any questions about anything that you heard on today's show, or if you want to be involved in the show, definitely contact us. We're at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. If you're in prison, you can write to us at the Prison Radio Show or simply write PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. Thank you for tuning in to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Virginia, and I've been your host for today. Please stay tuned.
What's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. I'm your host for the evening, Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Yeah. I don't usually do this, but
Oh my God.
Can I sing to you? Talk to you for hours. I wanna give you your flowers and some champagne showers, all the shrimp and lobster towels. But it's me that gets devoured. Ooh, when you do what you do, I'm empowered. You give me a superpower. Together the world could be ours. You sit me up on the counter, instantly it's thunder showers, storming for a couple hours. When we finish, take a shower.